I remember hearing a story several years ago about a priest who had died, and he went to heaven, and he was met at the gates of heaven by St. Peter. And Peter looked at the list and said, "Oh, yep, here you are, come on in." So he took him in and kind of showed him around, brought him to the edge of town, to a little shack, you know, with a leaky roof, and just like, "Yeah, here's your place." And, you know, the priest is like, "Oh, well, you know what, at least I made it, I'm here." And then short time after that, there was a bus driver that showed up, and Peter checks the list and says, "Oh my gosh, you're here, you've made it." And like, he hit the buzzer, and like the confetti fell, and there were streamers, and you know, a big parade, and everyone lined the streets to cheer on this bus driver, and they lead him up to the top of the house, and the hill, and there's a big mansion up there, and like, "This is for you." And the priest is watching all this, and afterwards he goes up to St. Peter, and he's like, "What gives? You know, like, I dedicated my whole life to the church, to preaching the gospel and all that, and I get the shack, but the bus driver gets the mansion." And St. Peter says, "Listen, when you would preach, the people would all fall asleep. But when that bus driver drove the bus, they prayed." Where's this going, right? I'm probably the only person on the planet that when I think of the Transfiguration, I think of that story. I think of that story of, because I've been to the Holy Land. 2015, I got to go to Mount Tabor, which is the presumed site of the Transfiguration. And it's a mountain. You go up. It's a couple thousand feet high. And everything around it is really, really flat. It's a very flat area. It's kind of a valley, a lot of farm ground around it. But it's almost like Devil's Tower, if you know what that is, where it's like nothing, 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 boom, big tower. Like, Mount Tabor is kind of like that. And when you go up it, you get in these big 15-passenger vans, and these bus drivers, they're just like all gas and all brakes, and it's switchbacks up the side of this mountain. And I was like praying my act of contrition the whole time, which is like, if I die here, I guess I'm on pilgrimage, so surely that counts for something. But so I just think of that bus driver, like getting the people to pray. So Mount Tabor, though. So a lot of times when you hear preaching about the Transfiguration, and you kind of skip over a little bit that first line. So I want to just draw some attention to that first line of today's gospel. Jesus took Peter, John, and James and went up the mountain to pray. Okay, pause right there. Again, when you're in the comfort of your house and you jump in a car and you hit a key and you know, the most strenuous part of your job of getting to Mass this morning is probably walking from your car in the parking lot to the church, right? It's not like we have to travel on foot. It's not like we have to climb up and down mountains or ford rivers or any of that kind of stuff. So this line goes in one ear and out the other. But just pause and think about it for a second. Have you ever actually climbed a mountain? I mean, Mount Tabor, it is very steep. And in order to get up there, you have to put out a lot of effort. Like, it's, you know, for every foot of that you travel, you gain a foot of elevation. So it's basically 2,000 feet of stairs to get to the top. And so, I mean, but that's the way it is. You do not end up on top of a mountain by accident. It's a concerted, deliberate effort to get up there. So why bother? Why go through all that extra work, all that extra, like, you know what I mean? You have to pack a lunch. If I was to tell everybody in the church, "Okay, we're going to walk to Clonmel and then climb a 2,000-foot mountain when we get there." Like, think of it in those terms. And so we just kind of skip over the fact that it's up on a mountain. But again, it's worth asking the question, why? We see this, the pattern of Jesus' life, again and again and again. He goes to extreme lengths sometimes, like Mount Tabor, to find a place to pray. The location of his prayer matters. He prays in Jerusalem. He prays in the temple. He prays. He gets up early in the morning, and he goes to a deserted place when they're on the edge of Capernaum, or in Capernaum, after he works a miracle there, he wakes up super early and he goes to a deserted place to pray. He tells his apostles, hey, come away with me. We're going to go up to Tabor, which is, again, quite a distance away to get away from the crowds of people that were searching for him in order to pray. So why specifically the mountain, though? In the mind, in the Jewish mind, and in the heart, the Psalms, you read the Psalms, you read the Old Testament, over and over and over, the mountain is a place of encounter. Moses and Elijah, the two that were there with Jesus, Moses representing the law, Elijah representing the body of prophets, which was the way for the first 1,000 years, 1,500 years, that the way that God led his people, he guided them by the law and the prophets. And so you have all of in Moses and Elijah, you have the whole summation, the entirety of the Old Testament present, kind of passing a torch, I guess you could say, to Jesus, who's about to accomplish his exodus in Jerusalem. Now, even with Moses and Elijah, both of them, where did they have their major encounters with God? On the mountain. Moses goes up the mountain. He fasts for 40 days and 40 nights. And what's the result of that? The Ten Commandments. Here are the commandments. And he goes back down the mountain. And that's when he sees Israel and falling into debauchery and all that kind of stuff. But the point being here, it was up on the mountain where he encountered God. And then Elijah, the greatest of the prophets. Where did he have his major encounter with the Lord? After he had fled Jerusalem, he went up into a mountain, and he was hiding in a cave. And there's outside the cave, there's a big roaring wind that was crushing rocks and you know, just big, huge kind of hurricane wind, but God was not there. And then this big fire came, this roaring blaze that was roaring outside, but God was not in the fire. But then he heard a tiny whispering sound. And he goes to the mouth of the cave and he puts his face to the ground because he encountered the Lord. And again, in Israel, you read the Psalms. They're what's known as the Psalms of Ascent. Let us go up to that to the city of the Lord. Jerusalem is built on a city. They call it Mount Zion. And it's not really a mountain, but it is up. You know, if you go, especially from the Dead Sea up to Jerusalem, your ears will pop as you're moving up. And it is certainly an elevation climb to get to the highest point in Jerusalem, which is the temple. But the Psalms of Ascent, that those are the highest liturgical psalms of King David, and that to this day the Jews still sing them. Let us go up to the house of the Lord. Let us go up to Mount Zion, to the place where we encounter God. So, again, it was not by coincidence that Jesus said, okay, Peter, James, and John, we're going away from the crowd. We're making this journey. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort in the process. But once we get up on top of that mountain, we encounter God in a new way. There's a reason, brothers and sisters, why God went up there, why Jesus took the apostles up there in order to pray, in order to encounter God. But I think there's a reason, and it's very similar, why we are given this reading on the second Sunday of Lent every single year. If you've been Catholic, every Lent, the second Sunday of Lent, what is the reading? The Transfiguration. The different gospel, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but we read the Transfiguration. Why? Because Lent is seen as a different time throughout the year. It's a time set aside. It's a time where interiorly we are supposed to be climbing Mount Carmel. We are supposed to be making that ascent. We are supposed to be making the sacrifices that it takes to say, you know what, I'm tired and I'm thirsty and that mountain is a long way away and then I have to climb a mountain. That is what Lent is supposed to be. The primary image of Lent, of course, is the desert. it's dry and it's arid, and it's, you know, Jesus for the 40 fasting for 40 days and 40 nights, and Israel in the desert for 40 years. That is the primary image that the church gives us for Lent. But I would argue that the mountain is probably the second, a place of ascent. So, in terms of interiorly climbing a mountain, so to speak, in the season of Lent, how are you preparing your heart for Easter, for the Passion? Because that's what like St. Ambrose in his commentary on this gospel says, that really why the beginning of Jesus' ministry was the baptism of Jesus, right? That's right at the beginning. This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. And the end, as soon as they come down Mount Tabor, just a few weeks later, they go into Jerusalem and Jesus is crucified. This is the wrapping up those 3 years of ministry. How does it end? How does it begin? How does it end? Both of them. This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. And Ambrose, St. Ambrose, reads this and he sees this as the preparation for the scandal of the cross. Preparing the apostles, preparing them in their hearts for what's about to come in just a few weeks. Because when they come down the mountain, Matthew tells us that that's where Jesus says, hey, I'm going to Jerusalem. And Peter's like, no, Lord, you can't do that. So, the place of encounter, the place of ascent, the place of where we have to sacrifice and make our own struggle to cooperate with the Lord's grace and ascend. And I think that's where fasting and prayer and almsgiving comes in. You are supposed to be uncomfortable in the season of Lent. I heard somebody say that aging is the aggressive pursuit of comfort. I love that. Aging is the progressive pursuit of comfort. And in the season of Lent, we are supposed to intentionally make ourselves uncomfortable. Fasting is not comfortable. You're hungry and your body says, hey, I want that hamburger. Hey, I want whatever it is. I want a snack in between. I want that chocolate or whatever. But I would say in particular, fasting from noise, fasting from, you know, the busyness of our lives. And this is the pot calling the kettle black here. And this really, honestly, this is where the Lord has been working on my conversion. It's just showing me that, like, I'm plugging too many things into my life, packing every single gap and nook and cranny with all kinds of stuff. And when we do that, it's like a slide puzzle, right? Got a slide puzzle, and as long as you have a space, you can slide this over here and this over there and then this, and you... But think about our interior life like a slide puzzle, and every single space is packed, crammed, jammed full. It's impossible to solve it. It stays stuck exactly as it is, and there's no progress. There's no rearranging. Everything stays locked in place if there's not space to be able to move. Brothers and sisters, that open space, that gap, you know what we call that? Lent and prayer. It's this opportunity, once again, to make a concerted effort to inconvenience yourself and do a little bit of a journey and do the work, take the steps to go up the mountain. That's the season of Lent. And so, just to kind of reiterate some of those things, particularly with silence, shut off your social media, unplug the television, shut off the radio in your car, and just get used to spending some time in silence and prayer. I feel like if we were able to actually do that, to enter into that, our Easter will look completely different. May we take those steps to go with our Lord up to the mountain, to the place of encounter.